This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. As you might already know, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn out there right now just waiting to solve some of the world's biggest problems. If you're a farmer, that gives you about 2 billion reasons to encourage people to use biofuels. Learn more at poet.com/ag. How do social media, gender roles, and ageism affect agriculture? Find out in Beyond the Field, a podcast brought to you by The Mosaic Company. Listen to the farmers who are changing the industry for the better. Visit beyondthefieldpodcast.com to learn more. We're talking sustainability. Then we move to new opportunities. Then it's time to take a deep dive into the rural economies across the Midwest. And we'll make our way back to sustainability and the role that carbon sequestration might play. Wow, we've got a busy schedule.
Live from 10-20-20-20 via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Tim Lust from the National Sorghum Producers. Then we've got Dr. Ernie Goss from Creighton University. And in the final segment, it's John Hennick from Indigo Ag. Right after the news, Farm Journal seed and production editress Sonia Begeman. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, thanks, buddy. Have you taken a look at the radar?
No. No.
You haven't?
Oh, no, my goodness. No, I've been spending so much time working on my 20-20-20 that I haven't had a chance.
You delivered that beautifully, Davis.
Thank you.
It was great.
It's
look
a tribute
at the big
to Barbara
blue
Walters
blob
is
making
it
its way across what? North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota. It's heading straight for Wisconsin. It's catching a piece of northern Iowa as it makes its way across. And on the backside of it, thunderstorms. Mm-hmm. It's just.
What?
Yeah, yeah. On the backside of it are thunderstorms. No question about it. And then there's that boundary, the frontal boundary that makes its way from eastern Oklahoma, southern Missouri, Illinois, southern Indiana, southern Ohio, and up into mm-hmm. the northeast. That's generating some rains and even the potential for some thunderstorms. So we need to keep an eye on all of that as we make our way through the day. But I tell you what. With as quickly as this corn and soybean crop have come out of the field this year, Davis.
Yes.
I think there are guys in some areas that are ready to take a break.
Oh.
It's just
okay.
Absolutely phenomenal. So what, 75% of the bean crop has been harvested, 60% mm-hmm. of the corn crop's been harvested. These numbers pushed right up past and through what I thought we were going to get for harvest progress in yesterday afternoon's update. Pretty impressive stuff. All right, man, let's get to it. What have you got in the news?
Well, the Environmental Protection Agency has received additional requests for small refinery exemptions for the 2019 and 20 compliance years. EPA data still shows 17 SREs that are pending through the 2011 through 2018 compliance years as of October 15. Although, Chip, I'm sure you recall, experts have told AgriTalk they do not believe those retroactive waivers will be approved. But the data now also show a total of 34 SREs that are pending for 2019 and 20 compliance years combined. That's up from the mid-September data. Senator Charles Grassley of Iowa does not expect any decisions on pending SREs before the November elections, Chip.
Yeah, and as soon as we get the decision on those 17 retro SREs, that's going to take some off of the list of the 34 that are there for 19-20. Simply because they won't be able to string together enough years of waivers in to be mm-hmm. eligible, but that's going to leave some exemption or waiver requests that are going to be viable. So it's something that we're going to have to watch closely.
Well, and this from the Stories That Won't Die file. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she plans to decide by this evening if a bipartisan stimulus package can achieve passage ahead of the November elections. Senate Majority Whip John Thune told reporters, quote, "My guess is Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is going to want to see some evidence that whatever is agreed upon has Republican support to try to convince Republicans over here to be for it," adding, "when their natural instinct, depending on how big it is and what's in it, is probably to be against it." Chip, yeah. This is not going away.
No, well, it's pretty soon they're going to have to quit talking about it, like Pelosi is saying. They're either going to have to do something about it or quit talking about it. And the president is still out there saying, "Listen, go big. We'll go big." But the Republicans in the Senate are not going to go for it because of what Thune said. It's too big. It's too encompassing. There's not enough targeting in how that money would be spent to go past $2.2 trillion.
Yep. This is an interesting one. The U.S. and Brazil announced they reached a new protocol on trade rules and transparency to update a 2011 agreement on trade and economic cooperation. Three new annexes to the agreement were worked out on customs administration, trade facilitation, good regulatory practices, and anti-corruption, according to the Office of the U.S. Trade Representatives. Now, Chip, those annexes are said to go farther on enforcement and penalties, among other things, than do WTO rules. Interestingly, the regulatory practices in the USMCA were used as a framework for these updates, Chip.
Cool. Well, we've always said that the trade agreements that President Trump's administration struck earlier should be used as frameworks, and that's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. And the Transportation Security Administration said it screened 1.03 million passengers as of Sunday, October 18, for air travel. That's the first time since mid-March that the agency has screened more than 1 million passengers. The total from Sunday is still about 60% below the number screened 1 year ago. And finally, this, the final debate between candidates Biden and Trump will be held on Thursday night in Nashville. The Commission on Presidential Debate says it will turn debaters' microphones off for specified periods when an opponent is speaking. Both microphones will be on, however, during other points of discourse. Chip.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about how that's gonna happen. But I would guess that Hunter Biden is going to make the conversation, even though it's not on the list of topics to be discussed.
It'd be spicy.
It's something that needs to be on the. It needs to be part of the conversation. Okay, let's bring in Sonia Begeman. She is the Seeds and Production Editor for Farm Journal. How you doing, Sonia?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Doing good. So the push for sustainability has made its way to beer. Tell us about it.
Yes, it sure has. So I've got two companies who are doing a big push now. Have you ever heard of Dogfish Head Craft Brewery out of Delaware?
Yes. Yep.
All right, so Dogfish Head has a new beer called Regen Ale. You're going to have to fly to Delaware to try it, but I hear it's really good. And they're working with farmers who grow wheat, and it's a wheat beer that basically they're asking these farmers to do no-till cover crops, precision nitrogen and or manure management, and then they want really diverse rotations to keep that soil healthy. And so the farmers who are doing it are getting some really good like bonuses, some premiums from it. And then it's apparently a really tasty wheat beer, and we're going to have to fly pretty far to get it, but I hear it's pretty good. and then, of course, beer giant Anheuser-Busch is joining the fight for sustainability, and they're working with rice farmers, specifically in Arkansas, to make sure that they're doing the best job they can with precision nitrogen application, because as you know, leaching and all that runoff that can get into water and things like that is pretty bad. So what they're doing is they're partnering with farmers and with a technology company to make that just super precise, where the crop gets exactly what it needs, no more, no less, and we get rice beer out of it too. So it's kind of a win-win.
Absolutely. And that Bud Light has been, or Budweiser has been a big user of rice over the years. But hey, Sonia, as long as these companies are willing to pay a premium for the extra effort that goes into it, amen. Go get it.
Oh yeah.
Go get it.
It's a win for farmers, it's a win for consumers.
Exactly. Sonia, thank you. That's Sonia Begeman from Farm Journal. It's that time of the year again. It's a good time for growers to look back and evaluate the season, what worked, what didn't. I'm joined today by Steve Gomm. He is corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta. Steve, how can growers set themselves up to find more corn bushels in 2021?
Well, first and foremost, know your corn crop's opponents. In this example, it's key problem weeds. Early season weeds are yield robbers, Chip, so it's important to know which weeds are present in your fields and their individual strengths and weaknesses. With that information, you can make well-informed decisions about agronomic practices and your herbicide program.
Okay, so it's 2021. I know what weed pressures I'm facing, and I have carefully picked my herbicide or my herbicides. If I'm a corn grower, what should be my next goal as far as weed control?
Well, starting clean with an effective burn down and a pre-emergence residual corn herbicide like Acuron, and then staying clean throughout the season is really important. Multiple effective sites of action help ensure quality weed control and prevent the spread of resistance, while overlapping residuals help extend control to crop canopy or beyond.
All right, so I know you're going to recommend Acuron here because it offers maximum weed control and preserves that top end yield potential, doesn't it?
Yeah, we all have brands that we like and we are willing to pay for, right? And usually we're okay with paying that little bit more because we appreciate the return on our investment. My go-to is Acuron because it's the only corn herbicide that unlocks corn's full yield potential. And when we apply it pre-emergent at the full use labeled rates, replicated Syngenta and University trials show Acuron out-yields competitors by 5 to 15 bushels an acre.
Yeah, that's so important in this time when we're looking for to maximize our revenue potential. You got to do everything you can, and 5 to 15 bushels an acre matters. All right. Thank you, Steve. That was Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, talking to us about how you can find more bushels in 2021. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels per acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator at findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. Right now, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn out there. That's a lot of corn, especially when you consider how many of the world's problems could be solved by finding markets for it. So, how do we use all this corn for good? POET is working on getting higher blends of ethanol into the marketplace so that demand grows right along with increasing corn yields. An increase in the fuel supply from 10 to 15% nationwide would result in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of additional corn demand for the American farmer. That's 2 billion really good reasons to encourage people you know to use biofuels. The more people understand about biofuels, the better local operations will do and the better off our planet will be. Help others understand the importance of biofuels and visit poet.com/ag to learn more about how POET is using corn from local producers to change the world. From transforming overnight into a YouTube star to paving the way for women in agriculture, the stories of American farmers might surprise you. There aren't many places to hear the real stories of the American farm until now. Beyond the Field by the Mosaic Company allows you to be a fly on the wall in these conversations. We interview farmers from different backgrounds and regions about how their paths have led to unexpected opportunities. In spite of challenges like dated gender roles and the looming presence of social media, these farmers show that with grit and creativity, you can forge your own way. They educate the public on agriculture's impact in unique ways and inspire the future generations of farmers to keep the world turning. These stories will entertain, educate, and most importantly, deepen your connection to farming in your community. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast brought to you by the Mosaic Company. Listen today at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free Resource Stewardship Planning Guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
I think I'll take a moment.
Chip, I'm not sure this song is for us. It used to be. It used to be. There was
it
a time.
It used to be?
Yeah.
I still got 30 left.
Yeah, but for, I mean, on my part, I'm almost getting to the point where it's my next 50 years. And I don't know if I got 50 left.
Wow. Yeah,
I'm getting
well,
there.
No, hey, I'm not saying that. It doesn't specify just, you know, like you've got to double it. It's your next 30 years. You don't have to.
I appreciate that because mine would be something like, my next 50 years, I'm going to get some dentures. You know, like, how can that be a song?
That can't be a song. It can't
no,
be.
No, they're not going to sell that.
All right.
Video would be terrible.
Yes, it would. Yes, it would. All right. Welcome back to Agri Talk. Let's get to the conversation right now with Tim Lust. He is the CEO of the National Sorghum Producers. Tim, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Doing good. How are you today?
Doing great. Doing great. That sorghum crop this year is doing pretty good too, isn't it?
It is. Going through a really good harvest really quickly, and something that you're not able to say very often. We've got basis going up 20, 30, 40 cents during harvest, which just doesn't happen very often.
Well, it's got to be demand, Tim. That's the only thing that's pushing it because the sorghum crop is good enough that it we are putting supply on the market. It's just that it's getting sucked up. It's getting committed.
It is. You know, 1 month in, we've already got about 44% of our crop sold for export. And, you know, I think as the grain trade gets ownership over the next few weeks here of more of that from farmers, well, I think we'll see that quickly move well over 60 or 70% here in the next few weeks.
Yeah. That's fascinating stuff. What kind of a role is China playing in that export?
They are the dominant buyer and the dominant player in that. About 80, 85% of those exports that we're talking about are headed to China.
Okay, so what are they using it for, Tim?
You know, a little bit of everything. Obviously, human alcohol is a key part, but you know, also a lot going into the feed industry as we continue to see corn purchases. Obviously, they're short for livestock feed as well, and so going into a lot of different areas.
Yeah, Tim, how much do you trust China on this? I mean, we've been bitten once by them on the anti-dumping.
You know, we've been through all sides of this, so you know, we go into it eyes wide open, and we certainly know and understand that there are political aspects to this. I think the things that we certainly see right now, and you know, we've had strong relationships with our customers in China throughout the process. And the thing we know is there's demand there, and I think that always is positive in terms of where things are at. Certainly, we continue to work around the world and make sure we're looking for opportunities domestically as well as internationally to continue to grow our base with all things. And certainly, you know, excited about some of the infrastructure things that we've been able to look at there as well.
Yeah. Okay, let's bring that infrastructure conversation back to Texas. And what's going on down at the Port of Brownsville? This sounds like an awesome opportunity for sorghum and for wheat.
No doubt. And you know, distillers, dry distillers, grain, and a lot of things. So we just don't get a lot of opportunities in this country to add new export capacity. So we're very proud that we were a part of a $14.5 million grant that will really help upgrade a lot of the loadout facilities. And the Port of Brownsville has started loading some sorghum boats, and a true collaborative effort. Certainly our state organization in Texas and U.S. Grains Council, but then working directly with West Plains, our grain company, and Congressman Vela and our senators. So just a real story of how you put everybody together and work for a good project that certainly is going to be very good for sorghum, but I think is going to be just very good for U.S. agriculture as it continues to provide some infrastructure improvement that our country really needs.
What does it mean for capacity, Tim? I know that having a port that can be somewhat dedicated to those to sorghum has been a goal of yours for a long time. But does this satisfy the needs for port space?
Well, it helps a lot. And I just say for a commodity like ours, when we look at, say, the PNW right now, you know, the PNW is just going to export corn and beans. And from a storage capacity and a logistics, that's all it's going to be. And so we would love to be sending sorghum, you know, off the West Coast, but it's not going to happen right now. So the ability to have another Gulf port that sorghum will logistically move to just really helps us from a competitive standpoint. And, you know, because there are times where that demand will hit from an international standpoint. And one of the biggest challenges we have, you know, is either rail logistics or ship logistics.
Yeah.
And so certainly that is something that, that will be very helpful for us long term.
Yeah, you mentioned the rail there. As you were speaking, I'm thinking to myself, this has got to help that rail bid for sorghum in your area, in the Southern Plains.
It really will. I mean, we've certainly seen that basis increase in places like Western Kansas that can get to the, you know, Texas Gulf, but really can't get to the center Gulf. And so, you know, that's where some of these benefits will really come in and just make us competitive worldwide for, you know, for the next 10 or 20 years, which will really help.
Dude, this has been something that you guys have been working for a long time. Again, congrats on getting it done. That's really cool. Really cool.
We're excited, and a lot of people. Like I said, a great team effort. A lot of different people involved, and but it's when there's a focus and a vision, and people put to work to it. Sometimes you get lucky and get things done. So we're excited about it.
Yeah, I don't know if there was a lot of luck involved in this one or not, Tim. It was a lot of hard work. Let's talk about the domestic market. Is there any new products that we need to be aware of on the sorghum side?
You know, I think as we talked about the food market and the continued growth there, you know, Kind cereal, you know, has several new sorghum varieties out there. They have a dark chocolate almond and a honey oats. And I say they're sorghum. Certainly there are other ingredients in those, but certainly for our industry, big deal to continue to increase our presence, both Grainberry and Kind cereal, as we continue to hit the mainstream consumer food market. So those are some new products, certainly, that on the cereal side that we're excited to see coming
cool.
on the market.
Cool.
So.
Yeah. What about, we've been talking about food markets primarily here, but isn't there a big demand for sorghum from the pet food industry?
You know, there is, and typically that is dogs and cats, and that is a very large market for us and a significant market for us, one that doesn't get talked about a lot except a year like this. You know, the birdseed market is not insignificant, and millets normally go into that market, and with a drought and a shortage of millets this year, you know, we're seeing a lot of white sorghum move domestically into the birdseed market, and so we're not talking like, you know, two containers, we're talking like, you know, unit trains quantities. So it is something that doesn't get talked about a lot, but when you start looking at the volume of bird seed that is sold around the country, it is significant.
Oh, yeah. Tim, everything that I'm hearing makes it sound like sorghum's going to be bidden for acres in 21.
There is no doubt, and I think certainly when we already see, you know, Central Kansas bids at 25 over for new crop 2021, with the board running up here, people being able to lock in some acres at profit, or at least know that their worst acres are, you know, have a four in front of them. That's meaningful. And, certainly we've had good yields throughout most of the sorghum belt this year in what was really a dry year. And, so we continue to see those acres, go up next year. I think the question obviously as we go through time will be how much. And what that looks like, but we definitely do expect an increase in acres next year.
Yeah, yeah. Domestic or export, Tim, where's the greatest growth left?
Oh, there's a lot of growth in both. I mean, there really is. Obviously, a commodity that just hadn't had a lot of resources in the past to be able to go after some of those, and so started to invest, obviously, 10 years ago with our checkoff program, and just still a lot of opportunities, both domestically and internationally.
Man, I tell you what, this has been an exciting crop to watch develop, and an exciting marketing effort for that crop to watch develop, like you said, over the last decade, Tim. It's just been a lot of fun. Great work. Congrats on the port down at Brownsville, and keep it up, man. We'll talk to you later.
Sounds good. Thank you all.
You bet. That is Tim Lust. He is the CEO of National Sorghum Producers. Okay, when we come back, Ernie Goss, Creighton University, right here. We're talking Main Street economy. There are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn out there right now, just waiting to solve some of the world's biggest problems, which comes out to about 2 billion reasons why you should be encouraging people to use biofuels. If there was enough demand for biofuels, not only could we address these problems, that corn surplus could quickly help ag producers like you improve your operation. So help others understand the importance of biofuels and visit poet.com/ag to learn more about how Poet is using corn from local producers to change the world.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
And joining us now is ProFarmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson. Geez, Jeff, in the overnight, it looked like wheat was going to be the leader to the upside. They've kind of backed off of the highs of the days, and they're turning over the leadership to soybeans. What's going on?
Soybeans are just resuming the rally that's been going on for a while.
Yeah.
I will note that beans are still trading below that high that we set 2 weeks ago, and so that's still the key point that we need to get above. I think the forecast for some wetter conditions in both Argentina and Brazil over the course of the next week is kind of limiting buyers from entering the market at a higher level, but the attitude that China is going to continue to buy encourages them to buy on weakness. And so that's kind of the pattern we're going to be chopping around in here until we see how much it rains and where it rains over the course of the next 10 days in South America.
Okay. So still keeping a close eye on that. We did get an export sales announcement this morning.
We did. 132,000 to unknown destinations. So kind of keeps that whole China story in place.
Yep.
There is a little bit of concerns that maybe, you know, the Chinese are now buying out into January. But how much are they going to be able to bypass that is going to be determined by these rains coming up.
Yeah,
in Brazil,
absolutely. Okay. All right. Good stuff. Take us over to livestock trade. The push to the upside in lean hogs has come to an abrupt end.
Well, it's gotten way ahead of itself. Normally, I mean, it's a counter-seasonal rally. I will note that the CME index is still $7 above where December futures are. So the downside's probably limited here. We just need to see another good couple weeks of export sales, and that should recover. Cattle continue to be pressured by weakness in the beef market on big slaughters.
All right. We'll talk to you this afternoon, Jeff. Thanks, buddy. That's Pearl Farmers' Jeff Wilson.
You need harvest results, not another radio ad. So let's get to the point. Channel Seedsmen place products to perform in your fields, and the results can speak for themselves. Get yield results from your area and less yapping at channel.com/yield. Huh. I guess less talking means more time for music. Classic rock, anyone?
That's channel.com/yield for local harvest results.
Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free Resource Stewardship Planning Guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Man, that was a good conversation with Tim. That is a commodity,
yes.
Davis, that is making, taking big bites out of demand potential. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And that's a good thing. That is a good thing
mm-hmm.
because it's a commodity that went for so long without that demand development that, It is really cool to see what they're doing. Hey, we are going to have a conversation here in just a little bit with Dr. Ernie Goss from Creighton University. But before we get to Dr. Goss, let's go ahead and make time for this industry spotlight. Talking now with Gunther Krebs. He is the Chief Products and Technology Officer for Ag Explorer International. It's fall, Gunther. It's that time of the year. What do we do for residue management?
Right, Chip, as we get into fall, especially into corn harvest, you know, these combines roll, they're leaving a lot of residue out there on them farms and fields, and that's a lot of nutrients being held up in that matter that could be available to your crop.
Yeah, and so how do we go about making sure that those nutrients are available to next year's crops?
Right, Chip, so you need to apply a product that's going to feed the soil microbiology and allow those crops to break down and release those nutrients to be available to your crop.
Excellent. You know, the other thing that guys talk about with minimum till is that the residue can slow things down in the spring, can it?
Exactly. You know, as you cover up that soil, that limits your sunlight from getting down into the and hitting the soil profile and heating that soil up. It also holds moisture up there to delay that ground from drying out in the spring and delaying planting.
Yeah, and it's been proven time and time again that the earlier we can get that seed in the ground, it gives it the opportunity to take advantage of a full growing season.
Yeah, that's correct. The sooner we plant, the better off we are, and we set the stage for a successful crop.
Right, and sometimes that residue just gets in the way of the planter, right?
It does. That trash can build up, and it can cause issues during planting.
Yeah, okay. So where do we go for more information on Ag Explorer International?
Chip, we have an all-new website that was just released last month at agexplore.com.
Excellent. Gunther, thank you so much. It's agexplore.com. Thank you, Gunther. That is Gunther Krebs, Chief Products and Technology Officer for Ag Explorer International. All right, let's have a conversation right now with Dr. Ernie Goss. He is with Creighton University. He's the brain behind the Rural Main Street Index. Ernie, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Good, Chip. Good to be with you. I'm not sure about the brain, but I am behind it, so I'm here with you. Thanks.
Beautiful. Okay, the index, I find this surprising. The index is back to pre-COVID levels, isn't it?
It is, Chip. This is the highest reading we've recorded since January of this year. Things are looking much better, but we're still below in terms of employment, still about 4 to 5% below pre-COVID levels. So we still got some work to do, but we're moving in the right direction.
You know, the fact that we've gotten back to within 10% of employment levels, Professor, that to me that feels pretty good. What's your take?
It is, Chip, and it's much better than I expected. We've talked about a V-shaped recovery, and it is sort of a V-shaped recovery. Now, the concern I have is maybe, you know, in other words, that's a sharp downturn, and with a sharp upturn is we could have a W, and that would be a concern if we return. And, of course, that will depend a lot on the coronavirus, which I can't have no expertise in.
Right. Okay, so that W, if we do see a W, what businesses on Main Street would be at greatest risk if we are in a W recovery?
Well, even without a W, Chip, we asked the bankers, we survey bank CEOs in rural areas of 10 states, and they're reporting on conditions out there. And the farm sector looks pretty strong right now with federal support payments. We've got agricultural commodity prices up pretty briskly. We've got trade looking better. But we asked the bankers what were the businesses that were in trouble, and they said 8 out of 10 said restaurants and taverns are really where the hurting is, and, of course, retail trade on top of that. So we got some real issues out there with small businesses.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, right there, that's the similarities between rural Main Streets and downtown New York City, because those are the businesses that are hurting the worst in the major metropolitan areas.
Absolutely. It's like a neutron bomb and went off in New York City.
Yes.
I mean, we got lockdowns, economic lockdowns in some of these cities. And I'm one who believes these lockdowns just are not working. They only delay the inevitable. What we need to see, of course, is a vaccine, but that's another story.
Yeah. You know, it seems, I mean, we go all the way back to March, and I barged onto my own radio show during the while I was on vacation, Professor, and it was just as we were getting into the lockdowns, and I said, this is dangerous ground. We need to find some sort of a balance. Now, I'm not smart enough, even after 7 months of it, to look back and say, this is how it should have been done. Okay? Have you got any thoughts on that?
Well, it looks like the necessary steps were taken in terms of the economy. The G7 nations, that's the seven largest economic powers on the globe. Japan only outdid us. In other words, we all had negative growth there. Japan is the only nation that had at least the negatives were less negative for Japan. So I think there were definitely mistakes made, but how often? This is only the first time in 100 years that we've experienced this.
Yeah.
I can't argue with the steps that were taken.
Dr. Koss, I've got a question. I had a thought. Now, when COVID kind of broke first, we're talking about the difference between the rural and the urban sort of life. It was the middle of planting season, and I saw lots of comments on Twitter. Hey, this is, you know, social distancing is a way of life. It was kind of the phrase that came up. It feels like agriculture, except for the rural Main Street businesses, is this just business as usual? Is this about where we would have been anyway in the broader ag economy compared to, you know, maybe some bigger hits taken in some urban areas?
In some respects, that's correct. But with the global economic downturn, exports were really hit. So the agricultural sector did get hit, but we did have federal support payments, which are going to make up about a third of net farm income for 2020. We're seeing farming and agricultural commodity prices have recently rebounded. So there's some pretty good news out there for the farm sector. But you're right, it's other the non-farm sectors which are now getting hit. And early on, it was the urban areas of the U.S. that got hit most deeply.
Right, right. And that gets us into this question. Only 3% of the bankers named farmers is experiencing the greatest negative COVID-19 impacts. Where did that come from?
Well, that came primarily from the downturn in exports. And, of course, agricultural commodity prices were doing well.
What location is what I mean? I'm sorry.
You mean what in terms of exports?
No, that where the bankers named farmers is experiencing the greatest negative COVID-19 impacts. Or was it spread out?
Oh, it was pretty widespread. In other words,
we
had livestock was hit, the commodity grains were hit. It was pretty widespread. And of course, Chip, we had the ethanol producers, which in states like Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, they are still suffering with oil prices down between $40 and $45 a barrel. So there's still pain out there.
Yeah, that would explain North Dakota still in a decline from September to October, correct?
That's right. North Dakota, where you're talking about energy, is a very important part of their economy, and that's not doing well right now.
Right. And then on the other side of that, Illinois, Missouri, 10-point advances in the RMI. What's the source of optimism there?
Well, it's a lot to do with agricultural commodity prices rebounding. That would be corn, wheat, soybean. Of course, soybean exports to China doing better. Well, I'm doing much better. We also saw pork exports to China doing well. So the USMCA combined with phase one of the China agreement, those are starting to do some real positives for the farm sector.
All right. So let's step off of the rural Main Street and get out in the country. What's this all mean for land prices?
Farmland prices have stabilized, are now moving positive in our survey for the first time in some time. So this is very good. Now, agricultural commodity farmland prices had not dropped as much as farm income. So we've farmland prices have held up reasonably well. Now we're seeing them moving into positive territory. Of course, that's on the one hand good news. Not good news in terms of your tax, your property tax payments, though.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so we've got the federal supports out there for agriculture. That's contributing, helping to support Main Street. What's next on the list that we got to have? We got to have the vaccine. Is that it?
Well, vaccine will certainly be the remedy we need. Of course, right now, Congress is debating the next stimulus bill, and we'll wait and see what comes out of that, if anything. Now, what we need to see, of course, is an opening up of some of the lockdown economies across the U.S., because clearly it has not helped these economies, and it has hurt them dramatically. And the lockdowns, economic lockdowns, have not helped at all.
Yeah. Boy, I enjoy our conversations. Thank you, Professor. We really appreciate you.
Oh, thanks, Chip. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. That is Dr. Ernie Goss. He is from Creighton University. The brains behind, I'll say it again, the brains behind the Rural Main Street Index. Coming up next, we're going to talk about carbon sequestration with John Hennick from Indigo Ag.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
It's almost like this plan. We're talking carbon sequestration with bump music, noise pollution.
I got you. I just got that. I wondered what you were chuckling about over there.
I named that tune in half a note.
Yes, you did.
Okay.
Yes, you did. Clearly. And then
welcome
immediately
back.
Began to chortle.
Yes, I did. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis.
Hey,
and Davis, because I'm not out on the road, and even though it feels like convention and conference and meeting season, or that we're getting to it, not out on the road a lot, but I'm still getting a lot of conversation. Number one thing that people want to talk about is markets, period, end of story. The emails come in. And that,
well,
that's
you're the guy for that. You're the guy.
Well,
you're the guy.
I would not say that, but I would say that I do enjoy that conversation. I enjoy that conversation a lot. Easily in the top five is carbon.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's a big issue
now,
these days.
It doesn't happen on Twitter. It doesn't happen in social media. It happens in emails, where I think it's the person sending the email wants to get the conversation going, wants to know more about it, but maybe doesn't want the neighbors to know that they're asking about it.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's why that's happening on email more than anything else. Let's have a conversation right now with John Hennick, VP of Carbon at Indigo Ag. How are you, John?
Chip, I'm great. Thanks for having me on today.
You bet. So the conversation, I can tell you for a fact, John, is heating up on carbon and carbon sequestration. Indigo Ag is always part of that conversation. And it's because I think people are gaining a better understanding that carbon sequestration is going to be one of those very critical pieces of the puzzle to make the environment better. Am I saying that right?
I couldn't agree more. I think farmers and farming in general has a huge opportunity to be a big part of the solution.
Okay. So questions from farmers. How are we going to measure carbon, and how are we going to measure carbon sequestration?
Yeah, so exciting news out of Indigo is that we've been working over the last year and a half with independent third-party registries. They're sort of the USDA organic stamp of approval. These registries are work in all sorts of different industries, from forestry to oil and gas, to say this is a carbon credit or this is not. And we've been working with them and scientists and growers to gain approval of methodologies that will help us do just that, to quantify the amount of carbon sequestration. And and have just recently announced approval of those methodologies. And we do it by a combination of soil sampling and modeling, where we use world-class, peer-reviewed, well-regarded by the scientific community models that let us understand when we know what practices a grower has undertaken, and we know their environment and the weather and their soil, we can then use those models plus the soil samples to quantify their carbon sequestration levels.
Okay. Now, you know what the next question is that comes in from farmers, and that is, how am I going to get paid for carbon sequestration?
Yeah, that's the most important question. And other big news coming out is we now have eight companies who Indigo has announced partnerships with who are buying carbon credits at $20 a verified carbon credit. And they're companies that range from professional services, companies like Boston Consulting Group, to my favorite food and beverage, Dogfish Head Brewery and New Belgium Brewery, to finance and technology companies like IBM, JP Morgan, Barclays. They're brands that people know, and they're committed to doing their part in their own strategies as a company for sustainability. And they have purchased carbon credits that we can then send that money back to growers.
Okay. Is there any way at this point of knowing how much on a per acre basis in revenue this might look like?
So these companies are buying the carbon credits at $20. Okay. Indigo will use some of that money to pay for measurement, verification, our business operations. $15 per credit would go back to growers. And the amount that they sequester depends on what they decide to do. And part of the program is it's up to a grower to decide what's best for his or her operations and what practices to change. And we know there are carbon farming practices that lead to more carbon sequestration. So things like cover crops, where we are increasing the total amount of photosynthesis that the sun and Mother Nature is providing for us, reducing tillage or going to no-till, so we are not releasing that carbon back in the atmosphere, improving the microbial community in the soil, optimizing nitrogen, so the right rate, product, timing, and placement, and then even things like increased crop rotation, which again impacts that microbial community in a significant way. And some growers are even doing larger things like livestock integration. And so it really depends what a grower is choosing to do, but it can range anywhere from half a ton per acre per year to several tons per acre per year. And at $15 a ton, that adds up pretty significantly.
Okay. Literally 20 seconds. Where is Indigo Ag on the learning curve when it comes to carbon sequestration and agriculture?
We have a huge effort ongoing at Indigo Carbon, and we have these announced partnerships. We have registry approval. We're quantifying soil right now. People are out in the field pulling soil samples, and we're on track to get verified carbon credits and get growers paid next year.
Awesome, man. John, we need to stay in touch. We need to have more conversations about this going forward, okay?
Appreciate your time, Chip.
You bet. That is John Hennig. He is the VP of Carbon at Indigo Ag. Hey, thanks for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon, Brian Grady and Jeff Wilson from Pro Farmer. And tomorrow morning, Congressman Graves and a Farmer Forum with Bob from Iowa and Jack from California. Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials. One farm family has a side hustle. Another's spouse had to step away for it to succeed. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast by The Mosaic Company. Hear stories from farmers whose common thread is about changing the industry. Learn more at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.